So, good evening, everyone. Welcome. This is the second of our seminars, like I just said. And the topic tonight will be stateless democracy and how we might begin creating stateless democracy in our own contexts. I'm Irene. I'll be one of the people kind of presenting and facilitating this discussion. I've been involved in radical left organizing for about 10 years now, and I've recently returned from Rojava.
And hi there, my name's Tom. I'm an organizer with the Kurdistan Solidarity Network, I've been involved in social movements for around 20 years. My background is in different social movements, solidarity organizing, and anti-militarist movements and ecological movements. And 7 years ago, I went to Kurdistan for the first time. And the motivation really for me going there was as a in solidarity with the struggle against oppression by the Turkish state, but very quickly I got to know the different organizers from the Kurdish freedom movement and to know the politics, I became inspired with the ideas of the Kurdish freedom movement and with the ideas of stateless democracy, of building collective organizing without the state. So we're going to start by doing some housekeeping. We'll be going tonight until about 9 p.m., finishing with some live music, which is really exciting. Just some housekeeping points. So as you come in, please turn off your video. And if you change the settings in your Zoom settings to turn off non-video participants, then you'll only be able to see the people who are speaking, so it might be easier to focus on the talk. A recording of this talk will go online at kurdishsolidaritynetwork.wordpress.com. This is the second of a five-part series of talks, and the talk from last week is already up there. So if any of you who missed it, please have a look. You can introduce yourself in the chat if you like, if you'd like to, and I can see lots of people are doing that. We're offering to do similar workshops to the workshop we're doing tonight for people's local groups in different settings. If you'd like us to do a workshop, then please email us at ksneducation@protonmail.com. That email address is going in the chat. And so the schedule for this evening is, as Irene said, the question this evening is, what does democracy without a state look like? And it's a question that we're going to look at through the lens of the Kurdish freedom movement. So after this introduction, we'll have a contribution from our comrade Nilufa, who will introduce the Kurdish freedom movement's perspective on stateless democracy. Nilufa is co-chair of the Kurdistan National Congress. The second section of the talk will be from another comrade Aisha, who is co-chair of the Free Women's Movement in Bakur, which is a part of Kurdistan which lies within Southeast Turkey. And her talk will describe what stateless democracy, the movement for stateless democracy, looks like in Bakur. And then we'll go to Berivan, who is an internationalist who's currently in Rojava in northeast Syria, to talk about how the movement looks in northeast Syria and how people have been organizing society along directly democratic, stateless democratic lines. And throughout the evening, we're going to have contributions from comrades involved in organizing here in the UK, because we don't want this just to be like a academic talk about stateless democracy in the Middle East. We also want to relate it back to our organizing and our context here in the UK, and think about how we can take inspiration from these examples here in the UK. And we're going to have a chance for a few questions to be asked to the speakers. So throughout the talk, if you can put in the chat, if you'd like to ask a question of one of the speakers, you can write that question in the chat, and we'll return to those questions at the end of the talk. And please just, if you'd like that question to be to somebody in particular, then please just indicate that in the chat. Yeah, finally at 9 p.m. or thereabouts, we'll finish with some music from Memozan. Okay, so that should be hopefully a really exciting evening.
Thanks, Tom. So as we've got a lot of material to get through in these first five sessions, we decided to make them mostly non-participatory. As Tom has said, if you would like us to give seminars directly to certain groups, like, we're up for doing that, and there will be some more participatory seminars coming after these ones, so watch this space for those. Whilst we're kind of doing these seminars, we're going to keep the chat open for you. Please feel free to use the chat. We're going to try to ask some questions that you can drop answers to into the chat throughout the seminar. But please be respectful of each other, of the chat, of the discussion that's going on, and try to keep on topic and try to engage with each other about the things that are being discussed in the seminar. So we're going to start today by talking about democracy. And when I say democracy, I can already imagine it ruffling some people's feathers. I definitely felt very turned off the idea of democracy as I understood it before I started to engage with the Kurdish freedom movement. So I can definitely see where those kind of feelings might come from. But we also ask that you be patient with the terms that we're using tonight and that you try to hear us out and try to hear what friends are saying when they're discussing these topics and new perspectives on these topics. So the first thing I'm going to ask you all to do is to drop into the chat just like a random word or a random word or two that pops into your head when you think of the word democracy. So if I say the word democracy now, just drop in a couple of words into the chat. And we've already got voting, and yeah, this is great. Thank you for starting, Joseph. So in the meantime, while you're all doing that, I'm going to ask Tom what he thinks about democracy.
Well, so what I think about liberal parliamentary democracy, democracy is, we're told by the state currently, democracy as it's described by the state currently, actually that means nothing good to me. Democracy is a word that those in power use to describe the system of domination that we live in right now. It's been used to justify the unjust global system. It's the system George Bush used to justify his invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan. It's supposed to describe a system which is participatory, but it's a sham. Arin asked me to draw a picture of democracy before this talk. And I can't draw personally, so I got a friend to draw a picture for me. So this first picture, the stick people at the bottom are. So this is showing liberal parliamentary democracy. So the stick people at the bottom are all of us, and we have a very limited participation in liberal parliamentary democracy. We get to vote every few years. That's represented by the voting slip and the ballot box, and we get to elect representatives to sit in the Houses of Parliament who are in theory supposed to represent the people who elected them, and then these representatives are members of political parties, and the political party which achieves the majority in the election forms a government, and in that government, there's an executive or cabinet, and the leader of that party becomes the prime minister in the case of the UK. So these elected representatives, even if they were trying to represent the people who elected them, they might find it very difficult to influence the head of the government or the executive level of the government. And moving on to the next picture. So we've got a series of pictures now. If the people, stick people at the bottom, want to try and change things, well, they can have a protest. You can see there's the picture saying "Change everything now," trying to influence the people who they've elected, or they can write a letter to their MP talking about their concern over a particular issue. Those things often don't go very far. So moving on to the next picture. There are lots and lots of other influences on the government which have much more weight than the people who made their votes. The aeroplane in the picture and the pound sign is representing corporate power. The government has ties to the people that give donations to political parties, has ties to corporations. The picture in the top right is a revolving door between government and industry, which makes sure that personnel from the government go to work in industry and vice versa, making the relationship between government and industry even closer. And meaning that the government answers to capitalism rather than people. So moving on to the next picture. You can see in the right hand, government's also influenced by the think tanks, which are trying to create ideology and influence policy and very often employed by the government to create policy. And on the left hand, you can see the TV represents the media. So the government and media have a close relationship, and the media kind of generates an idea that this system is the only system that can be possible, and also can serve to influence and manipulate people. So even the few choices that we get to make in this parliamentary democracy are manipulated from outside. That was our picture that we made of parliamentary democracy. Irene's gonna, do you wanna read out any more of the contributions from the chat on democracy?
Yeah, I was just thinking I would read out some just because I'm really enjoying looking at them. I really like this one that says freedom in brackets theory, injustice and lack of choice power practice. Generally, also people have said things like hierarchy, public election. There are a few people who are relating to democracy in the way that it is meant. Also, there's decisions by those affected. Which I think there's a variety of perspectives, but I think the general situation is that most people do not feel so positively about democracy.
Yeah, and in my 40 years of living within this system, I personally have never felt represented by the parliamentary democracy, which we're told is supposed to be least worst system. We're told that there's no other option possible apart from this parliamentary democracy. So let's talk about stateless democracy now. If people like, we'd invite you to write something in the chat about what words you think of when you think about stateless democracy. And while everyone's doing that, Irene, can you describe what you mean by stateless democracy?
I can try. I think it will be somewhat complicated. So first, I thought it was a little bit unfair that Tom got his housemate, who is a professional illustrator, to do his picture. So I got my housemate, who is a professional primary school teacher, to do our picture. So this is our picture that we made. To me, I lived in stateless democracy for about a year in Rojava. To me, it kind of looks like an upside down triangle. And at the top, you can see it at the top of this picture, where you have most power, and this is like as many people as possible fitting into this most power bit. And then the least power is down here with like one person. So we're not just used like having one person who represents us, and all these different people are participating. So it's kind of like a web, and you can see on the drawing as well, we've got lots of like links between different things. So we've got like family over here. We've got the idea of a social contract, which is what is used in Rojava, where everybody participates in the social contract and everybody can like participate in creating the social contract. And then everybody chooses to live by the social contract. And you can imagine that this is like a much better way of ensuring participation of people and allowing people to govern themselves than a situation where you have tomes and tomes of law and not even the people enforcing the law have read or understand all of the law. Down here, I guess very importantly, we've got community and community first. And these are all different people from different backgrounds. I've drawn them as animals because my drawings of people are quite bad. And they're all like holding hands, but you know, like it's symbolizing the connection between ourselves and our communities. And then over here, we've got workers owning the means of production and workers having some say in how their work is carried out. Up in the top right, we've got infrastructure. Sorry, I just put my hand over the thingy, the camera. And then in the bottom right, there's also like very important natural connection and connection to our means of production in terms of like agricultural food growing and this kind of thing. I think that's about all I've got on that.
So I'm just going to read out a couple of the words that people have written in the chat about what came up for them when we spoke about stateless democracy. So there's words like liberating, anarchism, Zapatista, bottom up, horizontal, people govern themselves, federation, local organisation and accountability, power in our hands. So yeah, people seem overwhelmingly positive tonight about the idea of stateless democracy. So we're going to hear more about stateless democracy. So I'm going to pass over to Nick, who's going to introduce Niloufer, who will talk about the Kurdish Freedom Movement's perspective.
Thank you very much to Tom and to Irene for introducing the basic topics we're going to talk about tonight, this difference between the liberal parliamentary democracies that we live under and the kind of stateless democracy. So now we're going to turn to the Kurdish Freedom Movement perspective. And as Tom said, we're excited to have Al Niloufer here, the co-chair of the Kurdistan National Congress, an umbrella organization for diplomacy, Kurdistan and the Kurdish Freedom Movement. And I guess we'll just get straight into it, Haval. So I've got two questions. Maybe we can get a third if we've got enough time. But we want to make the end for the friends who are attending to also to be able to ask you questions. So for the first one, I was wondering how the movement's new political paradigm differs from its old or state socialist paradigm in the understanding of the state and democracy and what role these have in making free life.
Can I start?
Please, Heva.
Thank you, Nick and Tom and Hevalvian. Thank you to the Kurdistan Solidarity Network to offer this opportunity. I think we are raising important issues in the right time, since we are all prisoners in our homes because of corona pandemic. So it's a challenge us to re-questioning the whole structures in which we are living and states, what they the governments, the parliaments, so what kind of solutions they are producing now. It's very important to understand the current situation, and then you will see what a nation state mean, a nation state's state mean. But before that, I have to say I'm not the co-chair woman of the Kurdistan National Congress, fortunately not anymore. We got our Congress last year in October. Since then, I am the international spokesperson for the International Commission of the Kurdistan National Congress. So there's a little change. So unfortunately, I've changed my position now. So I'm more free than before. as a brief introduction, I would say to understand stateless democracy, it's important to understand the history of the nation state. And I have to go back to history. It might be boring for the audience, but the problem lays in the history and also the solution. Without knowing, having historical acknowledgement, it will be difficult to understand the new paradigm of the Kurdish freedom movement. That's why I have to briefly go back to history. So, and because the first state was created in Middle East, 50 kilometers west from Baghdad, the first state was called the state of Uruk. And then the very developed nation state came down in Europe 200 years ago with the industrialism. And nation state was built in Europe. So on three main pillars: nationalism, sexism, and religiousness. So religiousness in Middle East, in the nation state of Middle East, is still Islam. But in European countries or the Western countries, religiousness is the state itself. It's a new God, what Hegel calls when he looked to France and Napoleon's revolution creating the French nation state. He said, this is the God. So the nation state. This is the problem. And now you see in the time of pandemic, the nation state is implementing a very anti-societal terms, using many of the states are using now this time to for their own profits. And we are now facing a threat from nation states. They're busy with eliminating all the democratic rights in the constitutions in Europe, but Middle East is more harsh than in Europe. And the idea in the Kurdish movement with organizing a democracy without state, which is called democratic confederation, came up when Öcalan, after his abduction in 1999, he was re-questioning the whole world order, because after the 90s, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, he was re-questioning very radically the reasons for the collapse. And he found out that state has nothing to do with socialism. Before that, when PKK was founded under the influence of Cold War, right at the beginning, when Öcalan personally is saying in his defense writings, he was believing or accepting the ideology of Leninism, Marxism, and Stalinism, some parts of Maoism, the dogma of state was for him untouchable. The dogma liberating the society through a socialist state. He said that was my principle, which was untouchable before. So this was the influence on the PKK. And then the collapse of the real socialism was reason for him to be questioning what's happened. So the main, what he found mainly was there's leak of democracy, which means the form of radical democracy, the full participation of citizens, was a leak in this real socialism because the party became the state. We see this today in China, very, very clearly in China. 3 days ago, there was a Chinese national, the national conference of the Chinese Communist Party. The party is the state. and the head of the party, the head of the state. Members of the Politburo of the Chinese Communist Party are ministers of the state. So state has become a monopoly under the name of communist state. The Chinese is called communist. They claim to be communist. But it's a party which is improving homogenization of the society. The party is acting like a factory. China is using 680 million cameras to follow their citizens, to observe their citizens. So when you understand the real socialist model of state and nation state and society, you look at China or in Venezuela or in some of the governments, states in Latin America, they claim to be left and say this is the reason why the US is attacking. And you see why there's weakness, there's everything, the Western, the Atlantic forces can every time have opposition against them. And the opposition is gaining support from the society. So we can't just say, well, Maduro is a good guy, the other one is bad. But the other one has to follow us in the society. This is the problem. It's a leak of democracy. So state and party are the same in many of countries in Latin America also. This is the weaknesses of democracy is used by the capitalist forces of the more economically developed capitalist states, like you see Latin America and China, or the threat between the US and China now. It has nothing to do with the clash between capitalism and communism. It's a power sharing issue because China is becoming a global power now. However, it's called the communist state. So I think Öcalan's re-questioning and criticism at that time is true when you look on Chinese experience today. So then he said, he started to say, well, if we would continue to apply for a Kurdish nation state, which was the goal of the PKK, having Kurdish United Socialist Kurdistan, like most of the liberation movements in the 70s, like when you look in African continent, Mozambique, Angola, everywhere, and you see today they're all weak states. At that time they all were influenced by the real socialist ideology of state. And then Öcalan said, having a socialist state is the same like the capitalist state, means that 1% is leading 99%. State is an instrument of accumulation and agglomeration of capital. When we see today in the time of globalized capitalism, a minority which is called the global plutocracy, it's a minority and we don't know who they are. They are in the state structures. But in the mid-age, we know the leaders of states like monarchies, theocracies, they all got the face and name, but today the plutocracy is not known. So you have parliaments, you have governments on the stage, but we have another reality behind the stage. The real state is behind the stage. We don't know who they are. There are companies, and these plutocracy are people who are citizens of the world. The minority, 1%, they can move everywhere without applying for visas. They don't have to go through passport controls in the airports. They're free. They can do everything with unlimited. And so they're lobbying everywhere. This is now, we are speaking about minority. So Öcalan said, if the PKK would continue, the PKK would become the state itself. That means 40 million Kurds would be run by a Politburo. And he said this is very anti-democratic. It's a pure anti-democracy. And the radical change starts then we go to the grassroots. There is a democracy. They have to decide. They have what the party or what the movement, what the group is has to do is bringing the democratic elements in the society because they are still existing in the society, giving them the opportunity for self-organizing, self-administration. That was the, it's a political, it's a new form of political organization. So you start to organize the diversity. You help diversity on the based on the principle of a consensus. And it's rejecting every kind of power-based ideology, means no domination, because domination means oppression. Wherever you have domination, hegemony, means we have oppressor and oppressed. So rejecting any kind of this, because this is ideology which created the nation state. It's one person and two classes, 1% the minority and 99% the majority. So you go to the 99%. Because 1% can't exist without the 99%. It's not the opposite. But we have taught the schools and the whole system that we can't survive without the 1%. This is the problem. So we are manipulated. We do believe someone has to rule us. So in the experiment, in the Kurdish experiment, which starts 1999 and firstly in Bakur, Kurdistan, concretely 2005, when democratic confederalism was declared by Öcalan, and then the PKK said, I give up all the power I got in the past. I will become a part of the whole democratic confederal system, and I will just play a role to look raise every time the need that the 99% is able to organize themselves. And these 99% are diverse. It's that pure diversity. So this is the very hard part of democracy.
If I could, on that, so thank you. That really sets out all of the issues. And so just on that then, you were saying earlier about how the state in its nature wants to anti-society. It wants to homogenize society. So democracy then, way for society to go against homogenization, to live through its diversity, right? This is the argument. And so that connects then to the relationship between humanity and nature as well. So maybe just for a few more minutes, because we have some other friends who are going to be talking about the situation in Bakur too, and Rojava. But maybe before we leave, you could say a bit more how democracy changes this relationship between homogenization and diversity, and how it changes the relationship between.
Sorry, I could not hear you properly.
The role of democracy in changing the relationship between humanity and nature as well, because the new paradigm is obviously important in this. So how is democracy and ecology important together?
Well, it has something to do, of course, with the hegemonial system of capitalism, which when I must add that the positivist science, which came up 200 years ago through the industrialism, process of industrialization in Europe. So for more profit, it was important to destroy every kind of resistance by society. And with the principle of divide and rule, the ideology of liberalism came up, which declared the humankind as the subject and the collective, the nature, everything, despite the individual, as an object. So say you can do everything. You are the God. But this issue of being object or subject is changing according to the interests and benefits. Today, we have a problem, particularly in the Western countries, that individualism is a new God. So the humans understand now themselves, they can do everything, because there's a manipulation through the term of liberalism. Liberal means freedom. And all of us, we are looking for freedom. It's a mystic word, term, freedom. So liberalism, I'm liberal. It's something sounds very, 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 very positively. So that's this ideology of positive science made us to the murderer of the nature. So we became selfish people. And today, when we look on pandemic, it's a result of the profit thinking of the humans against nature, for example. However, we are going to pass COVID-19 pandemic, but not another one will come since we're intervening in all kinds of the natural life. We are intervening in the life of the animals, of plants, of everything. We are changing the climate, everything, because for profit, this is the capitalist system which made us to their citizens as individuals, as atomized us from the society. But if you look in the history, the experience of freedom has to have something to do with the society. From the Homo erectus, Homo habilis, Homo erectus, Homo sapiens, Homo Neanderthalers, until today, the communities have still the values, they can survive and they keep together. All the science is a product of common ideas. And science of the society is nothing else to describe the environment, the life, to try to understand the environment and the life. But today the science has no limits to destroy everything for the profit of some companies, for example. And as a result, we have the pandemic. The genetic manipulation on plants, on animals, on humans. You're asking, why is that necessary? Where are the limits? Who's going to control that? And we have to go back and understand us we have to see the ecology as part of a chain. We as humans are one part of the chain. And then there are animals, there are the climate, there are the animals, whatever you think, but belongs to the environmental chain. The capitalism made us the oppressor of the other parts of the chain. We have the right to intervene in all the parts of the chain as humans. So we have to change this mentality, and we have, of course, to fight to stop every kind of scientific searches which is not for the benefit of the society. If it's just for the benefit of a minority, which means companies. So there's no need. We are busy now to look what is going on in the earth. I really don't know what is going on in space. This is another word. What are they destroying there? Controlling the earth through the space. It's unbelievable what's going on in the space. So I'm following now since I have time. I'm a prisoner in my own home and searching what they are doing in the space. This must be one part of our interest.
Yes.
So, and I think ecology is the humans are included in the chain, not over the chain.
And so that then.
Understanding.
And so that then really neatly connects to the understanding of democracy, where we understand ourselves as part of everything and we make decisions as part of everything rather than thinking that we're above and social engineering. So thank you very much, Hevar. We're going to have more time to hear from you later on when the questions come from friends who are attending. And also if people would like to, who are watching us on Facebook, would like to drop comments onto the thread there, I'll keep an eye on that. But thank you very much, Hevar Nilüfer. And we'll hand over now to Tom to hear from another friend.
Yeah, thanks very much, Nilüfer. So the friend that we want to have a contribution from now is Aisha, whose contribution is about the movement for stateless democracy in Bakur, so the part of Kurdistan which is inside the borders of the state of Turkey. So you can see Bakur is marked as the red section on this map, whereas Rojava is marked as a yellow section, and Bashur is in green, and Rosh Hilat is in blue. But the part of Kurdistan which we're talking about this evening is the red section, the part within the borders of the state of Turkey. Now, Aisha wasn't able to attend in person tonight because of poor internet connection, but she has pre-recorded a contribution for us. So she made her contribution in Kamanji, and we've had it translated. So and just just to give a little bit of context to the situation that Aisha has made this recording in. So when we were beginning to talk to her about contributing to this meeting, on Friday, the Turkish state raided a women's center, the Rosa Women's Center in Diyarbakir, which is marked on the red section of the map there, or its Kurdish name is Ahmed. And several comrades were arrested during that raid. And that's part of ongoing process of state oppression, arrests and imprisonment of people involved in this movement. So the movement that Aisha is involved in is the movement for direct democracy in Bakur. On this infographic that you can see on the screen, you can see the structure of the Democratic Society Congress in Bakur, which is the umbrella federal structure for direct democracy in Bakur. And as you can see, neighborhood assemblies send delegates to a city assembly, and the delegates would be co-delegates and would never be two men. It would always include at least one woman. The city assembly would send delegates to the provincial assembly, from there, delegates would be sent to the umbrella Democratic Society Congress. But Aisha is the co-chair of the Free Women's Movement. So the Free Women's Movement is the parallel structure to this general structure of direct democracy. So in the politics of the Kurdish Freedom Movement, women, and in fact, all self-defined groups have the right to self organize autonomous structures, but always you have a parallel women's structure which is autonomous of the general structure. And this general structure that we're talking about here, the Democratic Society Congress, just to make clear, it's not a men's structure. It's a structure that includes everyone in society potentially, but the Free Women's Movement, which Aisha is part of, is a women's structure, and she's going to talk about how the work that they do and their perspective on stateless democracy. And that's a picture of Aisha you can see there. Okay, so we'll go to the audio now.
Dibin zextu zordayı da çar salın. Hıv dedim ku civaka demokratik ava bakın. Misakine cansız ku de zindana amel edarlı berhada u tüy rüye fermandar eyleş geri gir. Me biti hoşini de spikir.
For many years, despite all sorts of violence and oppression, we have been struggling to create a democratic society. Our struggle started with the prison resistance and militancy of Sakine Cansız. Over the years, thousands of young women were killed, thousands of villages were destroyed, 17,000 people were murdered by unknown assailants, women were targeted by special forces, women were prevented from going to school. Based on nationalistic ideologies, people were told that the Kurds are ignorant and that they should therefore not send their girls to school. Kurds were always looked down upon, and the Kurdish language was banned. Yet we never remained without a solution in the face of these attacks. As Kurdish women, we view the main societal contradiction to be the one between women and men. We have organized ourselves to that end in the following 12 spheres: economy, politics, culture, art, society, education, health, women's rights, diplomacy, local governance, media, and self-defense. Our effort is to build a democratic, ecological, and women's liberationist society to counter the contradictions in society. By overcoming these contradictions, we want to advance change and transformation. The Turkish state is attacking us on many fronts. They attack us because we are women, we are Kurds, and we live in Kurdistan. In the face of these attacks, we have always found ways of resisting, and we have already made important progress. Considering the state's constant attacks, we know that we cannot ask the state for democratization. Instead, we work towards finding an answer to the question, how can we organize our society without the state? In this sense, our experiences are stateless experiences. They are civil society efforts. Our women's movement is organized autonomously. We say that as long as women are not free, society cannot be free either. And women cannot be free as long as a single woman remains without organization. Thus, we built our assemblies in villages, towns, regions, and cities. We also wrote a women's social contract, which ensures our basic rights in society. This is fundamental to our ability to resist men's sexist, social, economic, political, and cultural attacks against women. Women are always blamed for things, while men are protected by men. With our social contract, we try to prevent this from happening. Any kind of violence is strictly forbidden. Men who use violence against women are supposed to be excluded from membership of their affiliated organization. Likewise, polygamy is a crime. Polygamous men in our movement cannot be administrators or candidates for elections. Preventing girls from going to school is banned, as well as child marriage. We actively shame harassers and rapists by exposing them with their photos in our demonstrations. They face disciplinary measures. The social contract is presented to organizations and political parties affiliated to our movement, all those who work for the solution of the Kurdish question. Many organizations take our proposal as an example now. The social contract also strengthens women's autonomous organizing. When a woman has a shortcoming or makes a mistake, the women's movement is in charge of looking into her case. Men are not allowed to take decisions in the case. We also uphold the co-presidency system to maintain women's role in organizing. Because we work for change and transformation in society, the state continuously attacks us. They have even declared a war on our dead. They attack cemeteries, dig out graves, send dead bodies to mothers via cargo, mutilate dead women's bodies, and maintain prisoners like hostages. By attacking women, children, the elderly, and the youth, by attacking culture and life, a brutal form of colonialism is implemented. Women are inspired by the philosophy of the Kurdish people's leader. The state knows this, and therefore it empowers more men, rapists, and harassers to murder women. We fight against three forms of patriarchy: the male state, the family that upholds male domination, and patriarchal society. None of these are acceptable. We are struggling, and we will continue to struggle, against nationalism, religious fundamentalism, sexism, and militarism. We have several international days of resistance and mourning that we mark as the women's movement. January 9th, as a day of action against the killing of women political activists. The 8th of March, as International Women's Day. The 3rd of August, against femicide. And the 25th of November, the day for eliminating violence against women. The role of the Free Women's Movement in relation to the Democratic Society Congress is related to the fact that half of Democratic Society Congress are women. We are not tied to the Congress, but we are allied in our political struggle. We are our own movement. We are not affiliated to the movements of men, but since half of the Democratic Society Congress are women, our role as the Free Women's Movement is to protect those women. At the same time, women take part in the Democratic Society Congress for the liberation of women. The Congress represents the effort of building a democratic society, includes all the identities and beliefs of Kurdistan. We are not tied to it, but the Democratic Society Congress accepts our social contract. The state always wants to affiliate us to the mixed structures, but we organize without the state and without men. Today, women make up 50% in our movement's civil society structures. There are plenty of examples of democracy, but it is true that we have taken steps within a few years that would normally be accomplished in a century, if at all. One example is that our democracy represents the many peoples of the area. Not just Kurds, but also Suryani, Mehelmi, Armenian, Kandali people, and so on, as well as people of different faiths, including Yazidi, Alevi, and Christian. If the Free Women's Movement organizes a civilian council in a village or town, and even one person of minority ethnicity or faith lives there, that person will automatically become a member of the assembly without need for election. Our civilian assemblies must be representative of everyone. Our success happens because we based everything on the liberation of women. Today, concepts like free co-life, co-presidency, co-mayorship, genealogy, and women's confederalism are known and heard about around the world. Before, women were sitting at home without the means to participate in society, but now, encouraged by the struggle of the guerrillas, a synergy has been created. Now, in the organizations and parties working with us, women make up 50% of their membership. Seeing the amount of women MPs, as well as the co-presidency and co-mayorship system, many women in Turkey ask us about how Kurdish women are able to obtain these positions. Indeed, the youngest woman in parliament is a member of the party with the most women. This and many other things are important examples. We must always insist on standing against any form of women's oppression.
So I forgot to say before that the Rosa Women's Centre, which is the women's centre which was targeted by the police on Friday, they're calling for an online action on the 28th of May. And we'll put that in the chat, but the hashtag is Women Protest Violence. All Women Protest Violence. So that's on the 28th. And now I'll pass over to Arin.
Thanks very much, Tom. And thanks to Aisha. I would say at this point, after Aisha's speech, that it would be appropriate to leave a minute silence just for the Shaheeds. But I think we can probably just pop it in at the end. By Shaheeds, I mean martyrs of the movement and people who have fallen in struggle against capitalist modernity all over the world. So we'll take a minute for them at the end. Next, we have just a few small voice messages from friends who are organising in the UK at the moment, because we wanted to also bring this back to our context here. I know people are joining from all over the world, so maybe this is a little strange for you, but I hope you enjoy it. And now we have Kat from Acorn and Dylan from Corporation Birmingham.
From Birmingham, which is basically a organising project in Birmingham that some of us have been thinking about and working towards for a while, which involves a sort of a citywide plan based on cooperation and dual power. As a response to the coronavirus quarantine and lockdown, we kind of rushed into our first project, which is the Solidarity Kitchen. So lots of us were involved in setting up a workers' co-op cafe. So we decided to use that resource to do a kitchen that provides completely free vegan meals to anyone in Birmingham who needs them. We don't ask any questions. We just take people at their word, which we see as part of the mutual aid ethos of being unlike a charity, in that we don't ask people to jump through hoops, and we don't ask for them to go through this sort of needless policing bureaucracy of the state. So that's the main thing that we're doing. As part of that, we're also producing masks to help people protect themselves from the virus. And we're also just started producing a newsletter that goes out to all of the people who are getting meals, all of the people who are participating in the kitchen, and anyone else who wants one. And that's been really useful in terms of politicising things and making sure that people are aware of the political nature of the project as well.
Hi, I'm Kat, and I'm one of the national organisers for ACORN. ACORN's a community union. We work by bringing local people together to fight on issues that are affecting their lives and then win and build power in local communities. We're a membership organisation, and our whole aim in everything we do is that we don't want to be an organisation with loads of paper members. We want as much of our membership to be active as possible. And the way that we work is by the people with the issue taking action themselves to resolve it. So it's a community organising model. We're not fighting for people. We're not delivering a service. We're fighting with people, and we're giving people the power, skills and training they need to make real material changes to their lives. I think that's what I really like about ACORN, and you see, it wins. We're now in 20 cities around the country. We're taking direct action day in and day out, and we're winning for our members. Whether that's stopping an eviction, we're bringing people, or, you know, getting a landlord to make repairs. We're bringing people into direct conflict with the forces that have power over their lives, and we're showing people that we can rebalance that kind of scale of power. We can rebalance it by acting collectively and by taking action together. And it works, and we win.
So, thanks very much to those friends who have recorded messages about their campaigns and what's going on. Thanks to all those friends who sent us messages about their campaigns and organisations in the UK. It's really nice to hear what you're saying. Now we're going to go over to Berevan in Rojava, who is going to explain a little bit to us about Tevdem, who are one of the organisations that help ensure stateless democracy in northeastern Syria. So my first question to Berevan, and we've had to do it via recordings because the internet's not great there, is what is Tevdem?
Hi everybody, friends I already know and friends I don't know yet. My name is Berevan. Thanks so much, everyone, for making this happen tonight. It's super exciting. And as someone from the UK who's in Rojava, I'm currently here working with the women's movement in civil society. It's like, particularly cool and inspiring to be able to have this opportunity to make these connections and to see how much energy there is for really wanting to start to build stuff up and inform our practice in these different ways. Let's get started. I hope to join you all live for questions and answers, but I will send this message just in case the internet doesn't play. So, what is Tevdem? Tevdem means Movement for a Democratic Society. That's what the Kurdish acronym Tevdem is. So this is what it's for. And I think it's important that's more than just words, because we can see that's the purpose of the organisation. And so it's not about clinging to a shape that this organisation has taken in the past. It's not about institutionalising ourselves or our movements in one way and then having to stick with that because that's the way we've always done it. What do we want to do here? We want to make society democratic, truly democratic, not in the sense of like grassroots democracy, genuine democracy, not a reflection of neoliberal parliamentary-based democracy. And so that's what we're trying to do. How do we need to do it? And if the form or shape of Tevdem needs to change in the process, then it will. And I think that's a really inspiring thing here. Things change a lot. Often there's a lot of chaos. Often people can't quite clearly explain to you how things work, but that's because they're not going by like cookie cutter structures that have to look a certain way or take a certain form. They're working always on principles and on values. And so TevDem is part of a kind of three-pronged system, which is how civil society was coordinated here in Rojava. And I think it's important when we say what's TevDem to understand that TevDem is one of three avenues, three ways in which people are organized. And that the other two are the Syrian Democratic Council, which organizes people politically through political parties, making meetings, making diplomacy work, and so on, in all many different, several different forms. And the Autonomous Administration of North and East Syria, which is a system for administrating life, for the economy, for all the basic needs, for everything that society needs to keep functioning, there needs to be coordination, and that's what the Autonomous Administration does. Now, when TevDem was set up in 2011, it was set up to coordinate the system, basically make sure that the gains of the revolution of 2011 were made into something durable, were made into a functioning society. TevDem organized the cantons when independence was declared for the region in 2014, and at the time was made up from the communes, from these neighborhood kind of nucleus, grassroots base organizations. That are the kind of fundament of the political system. And since then it has changed a bit, and we'll go into the change a bit more later, but basically now it that has been passed over to the administration, and TevDem acts more as a counter power, but I'll get to that later. So what is TevDem now? What form does it have? TevDem is an umbrella organization for civil society, all civil society organizing, and that civil society, that just means society, you know, excluding military. So how do people participate in TevDem? What does it actually mean? You participate as who you are. You participate as a worker. TevDem, a huge percentage of TevDem's work is with unions. So maybe a teacher, maybe a builder, maybe a street cleaner, whatever it is. Or as an artist, you participate in youth organizations due to your age group. You participate because of your ethnicity or religious group, or all the different groups have their own collections, institutions, ways to be organized, and that's all coordinated and brought together for discussion if needed through TevDem. And obviously also you might participate in TevDem as a woman. All these different structures have women's parallels organizations, and then there is the Women's Civil Society Organization of Congressista, which is a separate and independent autonomous organization, but also would coordinate work with TevDem. And so, yes, it sounds confusing, but of course, you might participate in several different things. You know, a woman who's also a teacher, who's also from a Yazidi ethnic background, might participate in TevDem in different ways on all these bases, through unions, through groups, and through organizations. And so that's more or less what TevDem does. And they regularly organize meetings, particularly with unions, and again, it works on the principle that everything comes from the bottom up. So you start at the lowest possible level, wherever the discussion is, and if you cannot solve a problem there, if you cannot find a solution for a necessity there, if you cannot make the right sort of coordination there, then you move up to the next level, but only if it's not possible. And it goes all the way up to the level of coordination for the whole of North and East Syria, but always working on this principle that you try and keep it at the lowest kind of nucleus possible. And so in different places, this might take a slightly different shape and form. Again, the picture might look different depending on the needs, but always TevDem is running itself based on these principles, and including everyone has the right to participate. Everyone has the right to be organized in whatever way that is relevant to them, and with whatever group or whatever institution they are a part of.
Thanks for that, Bervan. It's very strange actually talking to you in electronic form, because you're actually with us and you've managed to join us tonight. So it's a little odd. But my second question to you was, how has TevDem changed in the last year and why?
So TevDem changed in recent times. How did that change and why did it happen? In August 2018, the commune system, so the neighborhood organizing that moves up through communes to neighborhoods, to your town, to your city, and so on, basically for sorting out all the necessities of life, was entirely taken on by the autonomous administration of North and East Syria. And so the role of that is to administrate. The Syrian Democratic Council, as we discussed, is a political avenue, and also took on this sort of political and diplomatic work of building up this system in newly liberated areas, in the now slightly wider area of North and East Syria. So Tevdem has since then come to focus entirely on civil society organizing. So that's all the other things that we said, people organizing as youth, as certain religions, certain ethnicity, as women, as artists, as whatever role it is, and particularly as workers. There's a lot of big emphasis on unions. Now, why is that? One of the reasons stated by the co-chair of Tevdem is that part of the role of Tevdem is to prevent the autonomous administration becoming a state. If this sort of organizing of the necessities of life, if this commune system had stayed in the same institution as civil society organizations, as people in unions fighting for their rights as workers, or as people making their voices heard as youth, or from a certain ethnic group, if that was all in the same institution, it was felt that it would be too much consolidated in one place, too much power. And that whether we want it to or not, that can essentially de facto become a state. And so we need to take that seriously. So it acts now as a counter power, it's often described. And there have been instances, for example, of Tevdem helping workers make their case to the autonomous administration, to workers who were working for part of the administration, and make deals on whether it's wages, hours, whatever it is. And be able to like broker, to work through conflict in that way as well. And none of this should sound antagonistic. This is complementary. This isn't about the, you know, the people who work in Tevdem saying, oh, we've got our eye on the autonomous administration, you can't trust it at all. This is very much about saying we are all on the same team. What do we want? We want a truly democratic society. What does that democratic society need? It needs to have a separation of administration of needs and of people organizing to make their voices heard in the various like aspects of civil society. You can't have both those things together to have a healthy society, so we separate them. And that's part of working together. Challenging each other is part of being in the same movement. And so that's, you know, it's very much supported by everyone here. It's seen as essential. And it was understood that the way that it was before could go this other way. And so again, we see that forms can change because you work on these principles and on these values. You don't cling always to the same forms. And in my opinion, this year really has a lot to do with theories of power. Whether we want something or not, a certain shape or a certain institution can create it. So we can't just wish for things to be equal, for things to be democratically administered or democratically run, because of course we all want it to be that way. We have to acknowledge that structures and institutions have their own power and have their own meaning, and we have to institutionalize and we have to structuralize, we have to somehow make durable our values and our principles. And again, these things can move and change, but we keep doing that. And then what do you have at the end of it? Yes, it's confusing. It's not always the most slick, streamlined thing. It can take a while to work out how things work, let alone get anything done. It's clunky. It's not the most kind of flashy and fast-moving system. Okay, fine. But it's democratic. The point is that people are really, really genuinely trying to make sure that this system gives everyone a voice, and that this system doesn't turn into something that sells out its own principles. And everyone in their different way, whatever part of the system they're working in and whatever role they're playing, is pushing to do that. And Tevdem, as it stands at the moment and as it's been before, but in this form that we can see now, is a really important part of that. And it's exemplary of how we can create these structures that in and of themselves help to like make these checks and balances. So it's solid, practical things that we can do based on on principles and on values, and not on just, it's not pragmatic. It's not saying, oh, it's just about the practical and don't worry about the values. What you see here is that we really take, they take the principles and the values, and because they are the heart and soul of this revolution and of this movement, and then are willing to, everyone's willing to get their hands dirty and to put those principles and values into some sort of structure and some sort of shape, and to work together and see what we can all make of it.
Thanks for that, Berivan. So now we have some messages from some other comrades in the UK that Tom's going to introduce.
Yeah, so we have two messages from movements that we've picked out from the UK. And the kind of the reason that we're doing this a little is to you know, think about what is the democratic organizing, like the seeds of stateless democracy, which is going on in the UK. So the two recordings are, there's the first recording is a comrade in Bristol who's talking about mutual aid organizing. So since the coronavirus pandemic, thousands of mutual aid groups have sprung up around the country, or around the aisles, in fact. This comrade is talking about the BS5 mutual aid group and the BS5 postcode area of Bristol, and also about the attempts to build organisation and democracy between the different mutual aid groups in Bristol. She's also talking about a project called Base and Roses, which is a project by the Anarchist Social Centre in Bristol. It's delivering food packages to anyone who requests them, and it's delivering hundreds of packages every week at the moment, and it's working together with the BS5 mutual aid group and other mutual aid groups across Bristol. So that's the first contribution we're going to hear. And then the second contribution is from a member of the Industrial Workers of the World, who also has experience as an internationalist in Rojava. So those are the two clips that we're going to hear.
Democracy in the two mutual aid groups is participatory, decentralized, and horizontal. This means that we don't have a hierarchy between leaders and members, or experts and volunteers, or givers and receivers. We are all from the local community, and we try to be in this equal through solidarity. This means that no one is kind of saving anyone or doing some projects imported from the outside. Our basic premise is that each person is the best expert on what they need and what they want, and this decides or defines what we do and how we do it. So at the end of the day, we are kind of all directly involved in deciding, helping, and receiving. The two mutual aid projects collaborate in a much bigger network of other autonomous groups. The COVID-19 mutual aid groups are at the street level. We also have a different postcode and Bristol level platforms. The Base and Roses Food Co-op is working with those COVID-19 mutual aid groups, but they're also involved in like intensive coordination and sharing with a number of various projects focused on organizing around food. And yeah, we are also in touch with other political groups in Bristol and mutual aid projects in other cities in the UK.
What makes the IWW different to other trade union organizations is that it's a union, as they argue for, is for all workers and for most industries, or if not all industries in the world. So you will have definitely have people working in different sectors of industry, like the health works, the education works, warehouse or retail workers as well. The idea being is that they want to create one big union. So that's the idea of the IWW. Because it's obviously called the Industrial Workers of the World, its intention is to create a global union movement under the name of the IWW. I guess another thing about the IWW as well is that, and how it relates to direct democracy and other kind of like direct democracy movements, is that it's a member-led organization. So ultimately, it's not about the top levels, like of the union movement, that make the decision. But in fact, its own members. Its own members can submit proposals, and also vote on pretty much any proposal sent through by the union movement as well. So the union movement cannot make any kind of like major decision that could affect the welfare of the union or its work or its members without seeking approval, as it were, from its own membership. So they have to have like a broad support of it. What's also important to add is that each of the branches, and indeed IUs, as we call them, like the IUs being the industrial unions, depending on what industries people are part of. We make sure that those organizations have also a degree of local autonomy, in the sense that they can, as long as they adhere to the principles of the IWW, and also work to organize along the aims of the IWW, can have autonomy within how they operate as an organization and make their own decisions on a local level, or indeed on a union, like a local union level. So this is something that's really important to note out, that the higher ups, as it were, are not so much in a position of authority, but more in a position of representation, which means that the only decisions they can make out are decisions made by the whole of the union movement itself. But yeah, the main idea is that you kind of work with direct democracy on most definitely on a local level, and on a national or indeed an international level, you send representatives who represent the interests of your local branch to these wider conferences of like national or indeed international conferences. So that's done through a delegate system. But again, these delegates have to be chosen by their local branches and have to represent the interests of their local branches. So again, they are democratically accountable to their branch when they represent themselves as delegates.
So
thanks to everyone who gave contributions, and just to say that so these contributions are ideas of how we might build on the already existing like democratic structures we have here in the UK in our context, but it's worth considering that the structures that we've talked about tonight, TevDem, the Democratic Society Congress, the Free Women's Movement, these kind of overarching movement structures, we don't have in our context here in the UK in the same way. So that's also an inspiration that there's work to do in terms of building, I would say. And sorry, I interrupted Irene. So.
I can't unmute myself, so. So I was just going to say, now we're drawing to the close of our session for today. So we've got a few questions coming up, but we just wanted to briefly take a few moments of silence for the friends who've fallen in the struggle and honour their memories. Shahid Namarin. Okay, so now we are going to pass to the questions part. There are some fantastic questions in the chat and on Facebook, so we'd like to just thank everybody for your questions. If your questions aren't answered today, we are collecting them, so perhaps they will be answered in future seminars or on the KSN Facebook We're not making any promises, but there's a good chance that you'll get your question answered somewhere. So don't be sad if it doesn't get answered, because we're quite limited for time. And I'm going to stop talking on that and just welcome Havel Nilufer back and ask the first question to you, Havel Nilufer, which is from the friends on Facebook, which says, to overcome the nation state sounds like an impossibility or a utopia. What would you say to people as an encouraging message? And what do you think were the key points in the Rojava revolution to abandon the static and non-constructionist thought about the future that we want?
I think the experiences which Ayşe was raising for Bakur in Turkey and one from Berivan in Rojava shows that non-state solution is possible. It's not utopia. It's practiced already, it's functioning, and under very harsh circumstances in Rojava, the system was built up against during the time of war against ISIS. And the same, still all the social and political organization in Baku, Kurdistan are resisting the Erdogan regime. So because the people learned through democratic confederalism in Rojava and Baku, Kurdistan, that they can change their life. So there are subjects, each of the individual of the society and the society as whole has understand that freedom is possible when they participate in decision-making on the very bottom of the thing, starting from the bottom, not from the top. It is possible that diversity can live in a coexistence. That we have shown. That's why I would say it's not utopia. It's a reality which is functioning already. And then please consider that this system is not perfect. Since you are building democratic confederalism in the border of current existing nation states, it's a parallel structure. Is not beating the nation state. There's no organized attack against the state itself. Like it's not, the Kurds are not attacking Turkish state militarily in Baku, Kurdistan. What they do is they're not knocking on the doors of state structures. What they need, they have to organize for their own needs. Through municipalities, civil society organization, this is possible everywhere. And it's more possible in European states because all the constitutions and the legal frame offers all of us to have your own initiatives, to participate in municipalities, even to participate in parliament. You have to act everywhere. So we have, for example, HDP in Turkish parliament, not because we believe in Turkish parliamentary democracy, but this is the area of struggling. Not rejecting that, changing it. So how can we then transform Turkey from a nation state to a democracy when we don't have parallel structure and show the state, this is not a threat to you. We are just using our rights as citizens to organize ourselves. We are not attacking you militarily. So this is very important. And in UK, I have seen that there are hundreds of civil society organizations. The problem is the networking, having common structures. This is the main problem. Now, in time of COVID-19 pandemic, I have seen in Germany, there's reaction from society. People are organizing initiatives for solidarity. So the society has ethical values, values like solidarity. But the problem is, in Europe, you don't come together. So it's very splitted. That's why each group is becoming marginalized. So rejecting parliamentary democracy is not a revolutionary act. We must go in and change it. So the law doesn't say you are not allowed to go to the parliament. You can do that. Why not? So we have to be organized in all the structures in the state, but as a part of our own structures. So fighting for radical democracy needs to be organized. Organization means people with same goals are coming together, nothing else. This is very important. It's possible. That's why I wouldn't say it's utopia. And now I will remind you that after the war against ISIS, we are now facing a very serious political threat in Rojava. I'm asking you, who is allowing Turkey to violate all the international agreements, laws? Turkey is member of NATO. Turkey is member of the European Council. And Turkey is committing war crimes in Rojava, in Afrin. It's continuing. It's Selim Gani is attacking every time Kobani. And Turkey is committing political and cultural genocide in Baltic Kurdistan. Don't you think that Turkey in this manner is a proxy of the capitalist states, of Western capitalist states, because of this democratic model? Saying to Turkey, you are allowed to do everything. So now the situation is more dangerous than the time of defeating ISIS. So since Russia and US are now coming together to find a political solution for Syria, it seems they will withdraw Bashar al-Assad. And they agreed on that. And they agreed also to divide Syria in three parts. So, but in Kabul, both US and Russia agreed now to weakening this democratic confidence model in North and East Syria, which inspired many of us outside from Kurdistan. So this is a more dangerous war than the war against ISIS. We have to be clear that it's not just, I wouldn't say the system is perfect. There are thousands of problems because we are all influenced by nation states in our brain, in our emotions. The fight starts with us. Firstly, we have to change ourselves first. It's not easy. This is the main problematic area to changing ourselves, learning to be self-critical. That's why it's a process in which nation state and people's democracy or democratic confederalism are working parallel, and there are links between each other. Since we are not having a wall between us and them, we are living in the state structures, even in North and East Syria. But however, so now there is a threat now to make the model, to designing the model somehow through the Western forces, the mediation of the US between the political parties in Rojava, for example, is not for the benefit of Kurds. Making a moderate system, a comfortable system to capitalist modernity. So we have experienced this in the 90s in Iraqi Kurdistan when the US was mediating between the Kurdish political parties PUK and KDP. The result was the first decision when they came together, signed agreement later on in Washington, first in Dublin and then in Washington in 92, decision to attack PKK. One of the criteria of the mediation of the US was that Turkey has to recognize the Iraqi Kurdish autonomy. And then Turkey would open the borders because at that time there were sanctions from the borders were closed against Saddam. So now we are facing the same threat for Rojava. So the mediation of France, Russia or US, whatever, is not to protect the system, to influence the system of democratic confederalism. There is an ideological war in Rojava going on, and since there's agreement between Russia and US to solve the Syrian conflict politically, because the main focus will go to Iraq because of Iranian problem of the US. And one of the part is now how to weaken Iran in Syria. So Russia already agreed to weakening Iran, but Iran has its main forces now in Iraq, and that's why there's a need to weakening to Kurds, to getting the Kurdish card under the control in northeast Syria, and the same in Iraqi Kurdistan. So this model is now threatened. So if we want to protect Rojava, the model of Rojava, there's need to defeat Turkey as a proxy of NATO. In Middle East. I would say if you want to protect the Rojava model, you have to focus on Turkey. Because Turkey's state is now the main threat to the Kurds. So the arrestments recently of the Kurdish women's movement. We have now from 65 of our municipalities, just 12 left. All others are now occupied by state. This is a political genocide. If you destroy the political and social organization, then you can't organize resistance. This is political genocide. So you are breaking the resistance of people. If you arrest people, if you close down the municipalities, the civil society organizations, women, youth, artists, whatever, journalists. So if you don't have, because this civil society organization or political organization like IHDP, they are organizing resistance. Resistance is the issue of organizing. So Turkey is allowed to destroy this now. That's why we are talking about Turkish state as a proxy to destroy the Kurdish experiment of new democracy.
I'm going to stop you there, Hevel Nilufer, because we have one more question for Hevel Berivan, which Tom is going to pass on. But thank you, Nilufer, for that. And there's a link in the chat now to the Boycott Turkey campaign. And it would be great if everybody can look at that and to start to focus on the actions of the Turkish state and how it is threatening democratic confederalism in Rojava.
Thanks a lot, Hevel Nilufer. So we're going to ask a question now to Berivan. So just to let people know, we're going to go on until 9:15, and then after that we're going to have music from Memozan. So sorry that we're running over a little bit. And the question that we're going to ask is, it's been asked in the chat earlier on, and it says, what about the role of law in Rojava? So for example, penal or civil codes, does Rojava have any of these to, for example, secure people's rights? How do you deal with the consequences of crime in democratic confederalism? And that's something for Berivan to answer. So I hope your connection's okay, Berivan.
Okay, we'll give it a go. You hear me okay?
Yeah, that's great.
Great. So the short answer to the question of is there a penal code or civil code in Rojava is yes. It's not the case that there's kind of no justice system, no courts, no I don't know what. And actually, in some ways, it's really, really central to democracy here and to the social agreement here and the way that society works. But it's what's it connected to. So it's really connected to the social contract itself, to the social agreement for society here and for the system. And one piece of penal code or law in particular that's really, really important and has been brought in new since the revolution is the women's law. So this is a piece of legislation that has been brought in since the revolution and been brought in for to support the gains of the women's revolution. And it's supported in a great sense by the Mala Jin, the women's houses. So it's these like justice houses which are run and managed by women from the local community, usually older women, usually mothers, grandmothers, taking this like central role in the justice system. And a huge percentage of that is, you know, domestic issues, problems within the family, women's problems against domestic violence and all of these kind of connected different things. But the effect of the Malajin of putting justice in the hands essentially of mums and grandmothers and who are rooted and linked to the community has actually been that the Malajin deals with a much wider range of issues. And also men now sometimes come to the Malajin with their problems because it's seen as one of the best ways to solve your problem. And this is connected to a code of law. But again, it's about the principle. And always in Rojava, conflict or crimes that have been committed, solutions for problems that have been created with that, they will try and solve on the, first of all, on the level of discussion, on the local level, on the smallest possible level. If you can find a solution and find a way that satisfies people, that like something fair has been arranged, that like reparations been made if it needs to be, or that people just have been brought to understand each other more, or that someone won't do something again, or whatever it is, then it stays at that level. If you can't find it, it goes up to the next level, and that does get to the point of, you know, the core. It's complicated here. There's a lot of different things at play, And it's another thing that's in a process that, you know, there's still a court system that people can access also that's connected to the Syrian government. It's like there's a lot of different things. And it's another example of how the revolution is a constant process. It's still ongoing. And people are working every day on that. And that is really, yeah, it's a work within society that's really important. And, you know, the philosophy of Abdullah Öcalan is really, really central to the movement here. It's the beating heart of the ideology, and it's what everything's based on. And what does that philosophy say about law? It says that, you know, the less we have morality and the less moral a society is, the more law we need, and the more law we're going to get, or not the more law we need, but the more law that we're going to get. Law basically comes in and is this top-down thing that's imposed on people and takes away morality and values from a society. So I guess the ideal, what we're moving towards, is that the women's law as a social contract, and as a set of values and as a set of principles, will be absolutely central to organizing, to institutions, but also to the actual values of society and of people and of the mentality. Nilüfer just so well explained how so much of struggle and revolution and building true democracy means working on the mentality of the state and capitalism that's got inside us and inside our human relationships. So the goal would be that the women's law exists as something, you know, really, really sacred, really important, really like important central pillar of everything, but that it becomes integrated as the morals and as the values of society. And it's not about enforcing it with this kind of state mechanism. Obviously that is an ideal, that's what we're all aiming for. And in the meantime, there's a lot of different, I won't try and kind of sum up everything about penal codes and how this works in Rojava, but it's very much a topic, it's really important. It's hugely connected to society work and to education and so on within society. And it's something where really, like, the Malajin is such a revolutionary, amazing institution. It's like really an example of like living things differently, not just in theory, but really, really in practice. And it's a really interesting kind of point of intersection of a lot of different things for all parts of society that really affects everyone. And so you really get to see how the work of changing society is going on in this topic.
Brilliant. Thanks for that, Merivan. And thanks for being able to join us. So that's about all we've got time for today. But just to say thank you to Merivan, to Heval Nilüfer, and to Aisha for all their contributions, also to the friends who contributed like audios for discussing their projects around the UK. We're super grateful to have them. And thank you very, very much for joining us. And thank you everyone who also contributed to the chat. It's been a really lively chat today and it's been really nice to read. And I hope that we'll actually get around to answering some of your questions in the future because they're all very, very interesting. And Tom's just got a few pluggables to plug. So I'll let him lead you out and before we go to Mehmet.
Yeah, so yeah, thank you to everyone who's participated. It's been a really amazing discussion. And please hang around for memos, Anne, because I think it will be really, really great. So the two things I wanted to plug, first of all, were the Water for Rojava campaign. So that can be found at crowdfunder.co.uk/water-for-Rojava. As you can see, it's a crowdfunder to raise £100,000, but every pound is match funded, so we actually only have to hit 50,000 to make £100,000, and it's the aim is to raise this money to support cooperatives in Rojava who are doing projects against the Turkish state's attack on the water supply of Rojava and for an agro-ecological cooperative economy. And as you can see, we've raised £25,000 so far. So we've only got 25 to go to hit that 100,000. So that's really exciting. And the other thing that I wanted to plug was next week's session. Next week, the third session of these seminars is called What If Women Are the Vanguard? Leadership, Empowerment, and the Women's Revolution in Rojava. That will be the same time, 7:30 till 9, on Monday evening. So really hope to see you all there. Really proud to pass you on to Memozan to play us out.
Shabash, friends.
Braves. Shabash.
Bundan gibi de bizim ne?
Ere başa.
Dengemin tet?
Ere tet.
Başa. Despeki ez dixwazım, ez kurdi deyim bikim ne?
Ere tu de kari kurdi.
Tamam. Despeki ez vahemi meyvanan slav dikim. Rastiji tişti hun nikaş dikim. Gori paradigma reverti anji şoreşa rojava tişte giringe beri ku em dest bi müzikê bikin ema hemiya silav dikin ev müzika min ji bo rojava hatiye çêkirin sê roja li ser malpera min kanala YouTube hatiye weşandin em bi wê dixwazin ez bi müzika min çêkiriye ez bi wê dixwazim dest pê bikim O eğer hunca amade bin hem dest bebek.
Serikani ve şukani biroka insane nebiye kavane be ilmu zanane vare devre şu adule kelaber hudane vare devre şu adule کلا بر خدا نه دیو شوکانی دایگ دلورینه همی ظلم و تالانه کیم یا و بارانه زاروگ دشه ویتن مانه شرما گرانه زاروگ دشه ویتن مانه شرما گرانه سریکانی وشوکانی دیروکا انسانه نبیه کاوانه واره دورش و عدله کلا بر خدانه واره دورش و عدله کلا بر خدانه شوکانی گرمه گرمه شروانی نازادیه چپر گریدانه گرو چقدر برد روم واره بر خدا نه گرو چقدر برد روم کلا بر خدا نه سریکانی و شوکانی دیرو کا انسانه نبی کاوانه به علم و زانانه واره دورش و عدله کلا بر خدا نه واره دورش و عدله کلا بر خدا نه
ابجی استرانا منا نو یجارده
بمبه و بارانه آفات و توفانه بمبه و بارانه آفات و توفانه دیرو کاکه و نارداج زیرا بوتانه دیرو کاکه و ناردام مدو خرزانه ظلم و زورداری همجوان ناترسن ظلم و زورداری همجوان ناترسن وانم فال کرین لی مدی کجن جزیرا بوتان دا ام زندی دبن آمد و خرزان دا ام زندی دبن ام خوادی چاندن کاوادا هاتن ام خوادی چاندن کاوادا هاتن مظلوم داشیارن اگیتا دجوارن مظلوم داشیارن اگیتا دجوارن ظلم و زورداری ام جوان ناترسن ظلم و زورداری ام جوان ناترسن وان انفال کرن لی مدی کجن جزیرا بوتان دا ام زندی دبن آمد و خرزان دا ام زندی دبن ظلم و زورداری ام جوان ناترسن ظلم و زورداری ام جوان ناترسن وان انفال کرن لی مدی کجن جزیرا بوتان دا ام زندی دبن آمد و خرزان دا ام زندی دبن